All right, welcome to Radio Naturopath, the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. I'm here with my co-host, Ron Meniza.
Good morning, Dr. Fran.
Yeah. If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can call us at 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. So, happy December 26, 2018.
Yay, it's after, like, one of those holidays.
Yeah, you know how in Christmas wrapping they say now the calendar is just one page? It's like now the month is just one week.
Okay.
That's it.
That's right.
Yeah. So if you like 2018, you only got a few more days. And today in Britain it is Boxing Day, because December 26 is always Boxing Day.
And what are we boxing?
Yes. So what's Boxing Day?
Yeah.
Boxing Day. See, I didn't know what a Boxing Day was until I hung out with British people. And, you know, I had a British fiance, and I went to Britain, and I lived in Canada, which is, you know, still part of the Commonwealth of Great Britain. And so they're still overseen by the Queen, by the royalty. And I, in fact, I have dual citizenship. So I am a subject of the Queen. How funny is that?
I think it's hysterical.
So Meghan Markle and Kate Middleton, they're my princesses.
Right.
Yes. And William and Harry, they're like, they have dominion over me. Is that so funny? Anyway,
I think it's a little strange.
Yeah, it's a little strange. But anyway, that be that, you know, where people get excited about the royalty over here, I'm actually their subject. It's pretty funny. So anyway, given that I am a citizen of the British Commonwealth, I thought I'd talk about what today means. Today's Boxing Day. And some people say that the 26th in the UK, it's because they want another day off and they want to have, it's a bank, in Britain, it's a bank holiday, which means that you get, I guess the banks are off, but it means that you get to still be off work and hang out with your friends and your family. It's a nice thing. And what the reason it's called Boxing Day is because a Christmas box is something you get in Britain. That's a Christmas present. And in years past, when everybody had servants, it was the day off. The servants could take the day off, and they would also receive their Christmas box from their masters, if you will.
Masters.
And
ugh.
They would also go home and give their Christmas boxes to their families. And also, it refers to charity drives because of the boxes that are used to collect money for the poor. And so the boxes are placed in the churches on Christmas Day, and then they're given to the poor on Boxing Day. So also, this one I had no idea. There's a nautical tradition, and that is that great sailing ships had a box that had a lot of money in it for good luck. And if the voyage was a success, the box was given to a priest, opened at Christmas, and the contents were given to the poor. So that's how it is. That's Boxing Day. So today is Boxing Day. And in Britain, people just hang out. They hang out with their family or their friends. You know, they drink tea and have you know, enjoy their gifts and that kind of thing. Also, there's also silly things that happen, like polar bear plunges.
Like
people,
right.
People jump into the English Channel on Boxing Day.
We do that sometimes on New Year's Day.
Yeah. I don't plan to do. Well, I might go. I actually might plunge myself in the Gulf on New Year's Day. That may happen. At least I will dunk my toes in it. I hope to dunk my toes most days in the Gulf starting on the 29th.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So there's also rich people will go fox hunting. And they would also go shopping, which is what we do in the U.S. It didn't even occur to me that to go shopping today. Why would I want to go shopping today? Did all that shopping?
Why would you want to? Because you wanted to use your new elbow pads and knee pads.
Right. I forgot about that. The people go shopping to return their stuff and exchange their gifts.
It's an enormous day today.
Really?
Apparently. Yeah.
It's a big retail day.
It's a big retail day.
And there's a lot of sales.
It's a silly day.
So, did you know in Ireland today is St. Stephen's Day? And
okay.
It's named after St. Stephen, who was stoned to death for believing in Jesus.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, right. And so, you know, people are, today is less formal. So if you're in Britain, it's not
as
formal as Christmas
Day. Yeah, you don't get stoned for being a believer in Christianity.
No, but you can visit your friends and have a drink or, something to drink
right.
and a snack.
Okay.
You know, and you can also have your leftovers. But like we do that in the U.S. here too, have
right.
leftovers. And we have so much stuff in the house. It's unbelievable.
We do. We collected a bunch of stuff.
Sweeties and goodies. Yeah, we're going to have to offload some of that stuff. So that's today. Today's Boxing Day. So I hope you enjoy your Boxing Day. If you're off work, bless you. Enjoy your day. I hope you're enjoying listening to Radio Naturopath, and we'll give you some good information. So let's get started with we had a caller from Lebanon call in
right.
at Lebanon, Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
not Lebanon, the country.
Right.
So anyway, so the caller wanted some information about what do you do when you have first been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease? So and what do you do, presumably natural medicine wise? So
right.
if you've been first diagnosed, what I didn't catch was the person actually diagnosed with Parkinson's disease?
This is a friend of theirs, and yes, I
okay.
believe so.
All right. So when you're first diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, obviously you should be in contact with a neurologist who's overseeing you, and you have regular contact with them. The neurologist may be recommending medications for you. You'll often be given so first of all, we have to back up and say what Parkinson's disease is. Parkinson's disease is an unfortunate condition where you have neurodegeneration of the nigrostriatal pathway of the dopaminergic neurons of the nigrostriatal pathway. That is what Parkinson's disease
and,
is.
And we bring that down to common?
Yeah. So anyway, so there's this pathway in your brain,
okay.
this nerve pathway, and it controls initiation of movement. So this pathway is controlled mostly by a neurotransmitter called dopamine. In fact, there's actually a three-part pathway. There's three neurotransmitters that interact with each other, and they are dopamine, acetylcholine, and GABA, gamma-aminobutyric acid. And in this case, dopamine and acetylcholine are they're excitatory amino acids, whereas GABA is an inhibitory amino acids. And so this pathway gets disrupted, and the specific pathway is the nigrostriatal pathway. And why it's called the nigrostriatal pathway is because the cell bodies, which means the nuclei, the nerve centers of the nerve cells, are in the substantia nigra, which means the black stuff. Anyway, it's a part of your brain that apparently is a little bit darker in color than the rest of your brain or than other parts of your brain. It's called the substantia nigra. And the dendrites finish in the striatum and I believe in the caudate nucleus. So anyway, so you have this pathway. And so when you have Parkinson's disease, this pathway is what degenerates. And this pathway controls movement. So it controls initiation of movement. So people with Parkinson's disease have trouble with initiation of movement. They also have resting tremor, so that they can't initiate movement, but they when they are at rest, things will start to move. And often they'll start with a pill rolling tremor, what they call pill rolling tremor, that one of their hands will look like it's rolling a pill in their hand. And it'll often be one-sided. That's what you see. So you'll see if the lesion in the brain is going to be on one side or the other, so you'll see movement on the opposite side. So that's what you see. So there's a neurodegeneration there. So what you want to prevent, you want to improve this person's quality of life, and you want to make it so that they can move normally. And the interesting thing about people with Parkinson's disease is that once they start moving, often they can move normally. Other symptoms of Parkinson's disease are flat affect. So one of the things you'll see is, especially if the person doesn't have any significant dementia, that the person's brain, their cognitive functions will still be functioning normally, but they will have a very flat affect. So you think that they're not interacting with you, and yet they are having all their normal emotions. They just can't show it in their faces because of that initiation of movement thing.
Right. I know I have been around people with Parkinson's disease, and they're very aware.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like they have anything. They're perceiving everything that you're telling them.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, and yet they look a little flat, and right. yet they're interacting with you. When
sure.
they speak, they're interacting normally, and they have normal emotions and stuff like that.
Right.
So it's mostly a movement disorder. And I believe as it progresses, you can get dementia and neurodegeneration of the cognitive functions. But when in early stages, you don't necessarily. You can still have your cognitive functions. But the first thing that happens is that the movement disorder. So when you go to the neurologist, what will often happen is you will be given replacements for the dopamine that you're not making. And the thing is, you can't be given straight up dopamine, because dopamine, if you just give dopamine injections or take dopamine orally, it breaks down. It can't cross the blood-brain barrier. So it can't get into your brain if you take a pill or if you have an injection in your arm or your leg. So the solution is not to make an injection in your leg. The solution is to give you L-DOPA, which is a precursor to dopamine, which does cross the blood-brain barrier. And then once it crosses into the brain, you have enzymes that will turn it into dopamine. And so the other thing, the other problem is that when you take L-DOPA, you need dopamine in all of the cells in your body. I mean, there's dopaminergic neurons in your outside of your brain. So they're in the peripheral nervous system. So when you take L-DOPA, it can get converted to dopamine in your body, in the rest of your body and not in your brain. So then it never makes it to your brain. So the solution to that is you'll often be given carbidopa. And carbidopa doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier well. And the enzymes that convert dopamine, I think DOPA decarboxylase, something like that. The enzymes that convert L-DOPA to dopamine will be taken up by this carbidopa, so more L-DOPA is available to cross into the brain. And that's what you're usually given at first. And so that's the dopamine replacement that you're given. And so in naturopathic medicine, what we do, we want to make people more comfortable, and we want to help to protect them against further neurodegeneration. So what we wind up doing is, of course, you pull out all the naturopathic stops, just like anybody else. You make sure that their nutrition is good, that if they're gluten intolerant, they're not eating gluten, that you check their vitamin levels, their vitamin D and their vitamin B12. You do make sure their vitamin B12, their B vitamin levels are in good shape, because those run your nerves. So those are going to be very important. You could do a nutritional test where you check on their antioxidant and their vitamin activity levels. There are special tests that naturopaths can do that can help with that. The other thing you want to do is, it's not uncommon. I've seen people in my practice who have had Parkinson's, and they have had a history of working in industry, that they've had a history of environmental exposures.
I was going to say, the people that I've known that have had problems with Parkinson's, they were definitely exposed to certain chemicals.
Yes.
And that probably is suspected that may have triggered the
right.
situation.
So there's heavy metal toxicity is one thing that you suspect, and other chemicals as well. So one of the things we will sometimes do is check the person for heavy metal toxicity. And if they have it, we either recommend them for chelation. So in Connecticut, we can't give like true chelating substances. We can't give DMSA, dimethyl succinic acid, or dimercaptosuccinic acid. We can't give that anymore. It's a prescription now. So you have to go to a holistically oriented MD who will administer that. And there are some of those in Connecticut, and there are some in Massachusetts where we'll send people. We will also encourage people to do gentler forms of chelation. And you can do different tests to see if the person has heavy metals sequestered in their bodies. You can do random urine tests. You can do 24-hour or, timed urine tests over 6 hours, 10 hours, 24 hours that there are reference ranges for. You can do hair analysis testing, which it's equivocal. If somebody has a very high level of some metal in their hair, I often want to confirm it with some other source, urine or blood. Sometimes you can do blood tests, although blood tests tend to represent very recent exposure, where urine tests and hair tests tend to represent longer term exposure. So we do various things in naturopathic medicine to help get rid of metals. We might offer the person cilantro or enhanced versions of cilantro, like the product from Nutramatic, cilantro. We might use nanoparticles of there's nanoparticles of silver that are used to help with chelation. There's liver detoxification that we use. We give people sulfur-containing compounds. We can't give DMSA, but we can give N-acetylcysteine. We can give MSM. So sulfur-bearing compounds, sulfur tends to bond to heavy metals and help to chelate them out of the body. So we'll give them lots of liver support. So that's something we do. And then to address the nerves, we do things to address nerves. There's a nice compound that's a preparation of anise. That's a brain nerve cleanser that I like to use. I often use that for people with Lyme disease, but I would consider using that for people with other neurodegenerative conditions. And there's another preparation from a rainforest or Mapalo, which is also for neurodegenerative conditions. We do that along with a lot of detox. And then you would also do things to help to rebuild nerves. So as the nerves are degenerating, you're helping to rebuild them. So you give lots of fish oil, especially with DHA in it. Fish oil is something that's anti-inflammatory and helps to rebuild nerves. You might also give phosphatidylcholine. Phosphatidylcholine is a phospholipid. It's part of cell membranes. It's something that can help to rebuild the nerves. And you might also give antioxidants. I like to give alpha-lipoic acid to people with Parkinson's symptoms because it's a small molecule. It's a great antioxidant, and it gets into the brain. It can help to slow down neurodegeneration. It's something we like to give. Also might give curcumin, you know, especially curcumin, curcumin phytosome, something else that can get into the brain and help to slow down neurodegeneration. So there's a whole bunch of things that you can do. You're going to assess the person completely to see what's going on in their body in general and their lives in general, and, you know, help them with all the naturopathic things, help them with stress reduction, good diet, diet that's high in antioxidants, make sure they're not inflaming themselves in general ways like eating too much sugar or smoking or something like that. And then there's the specific things you do to help to rebuild nerves. So that's what you do.
Hmm.
All right.
So it's a tough road, though. I mean, if you've got it, there's not really much you can do other than, you know, obviously what you just said. But
and yet there are some people who do very well, and they are able to slow down their, you know, their neurodegeneration. You know, you have the Parkinson's Foundation, Michael J. Fox Foundation, because Michael J. Fox started his Parkinson's early. Right. And so he's working on it all the time. And even he, I mean, I'm sure he has the best of care, and even he still can only help himself so much.
Right.
He still suffers from
the illness. He's still functioning, though. He's still...
It's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing.
But if you hear him talk, he talks about how exhausting it is.
Yeah.
Because he can't stop his movements.
Right.
And, like, if he's acting, because he will still... You'll still see him on shows sometimes.
Yeah.
And when he's acting, it can be really tiring for him because he has to keep his movements calm.
Right.
His you know, his resting movements calm, and he has to take meds to do that, and to doing that is really exhausting.
What about like acupuncture?
Sure, acupuncture is something. Again, that's a general that's a general treatment that could be helpful. You know, it helps with nerve function and helps people to be calmer.
Yeah.
You know, people with neurological conditions. Also, the other thing that happens is because there's a lot of rigidity in Parkinson's disease. Muscles can become very tense and tight and rigid. So you do want to do body work with these people. You want to give them magnesium to take to calm the muscles, and helping them with body work is a great idea. Acupuncture, massage, whatever they can tolerate, physical therapy, all of those things can be really helpful. Yeah. So that's...
And then I remember that we had talked about this in the past, Parkinson's and cycling.
Oh, yes. Well, there's certain activities. Well, see, here's the thing. Parkinson's, the big thing that people with Parkinson's have difficulty with is initiating movement. So once they get going, in some instances, they can keep going.
Right.
So cycling, because of the repetitive nature of the activity... Once they get moving on the bicycle, they can ride the bike, and their Parkinson's symptoms abate. It's really interesting because they've gotten past the initiation of the movement.
Right. Right.
And so I think that's how that works. And I think that they found that people who cycle while having Parkinson's, it improves their symptoms.
Right.
Of course, it's going to improve their well-being. It's going to improve their circulation. It's going to improve a whole bunch of things.
Sure, sure.
And yeah, I'm wondering if that's the only activity that...
Well, I'm looking here just to see, you know, what other physical activities can work. But I think generally physical activity is a very known positive situation for someone with Parkinson's disease. Of course, it's also positive for anyone, isn't it?
For anything. Anything at all.
I saw the look on your face as I was
what
stating that.
What isn't it good for?
I know.
You know what else is important?
What's that?
Hydration.
Yeah.
Hydration is really important.
Hydration's important.
In fact, it's important for me right now.
Oh, do you need to hydrate right now?
Yes, please.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I'm being cued here.
Yes. Yes, as somebody didn't grab the water bottle when she was setting up the desk here. Meanwhile, I'm going to talk about some things that might be of interest to you right now. A little lighter on the lighter side. Thank you so much. Now I have a nice bottle of water in front of me. Okay. So, anyway, things that might be in your head right now. You have a ton of goodies in the house. Now what?
Festivus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Feats of strength and airing your grievances?
No, it's a be festive and eat some food and figure out a way to do
because
something about
Boxing
it afterwards.
Day.
Right.
Yeah.
It's Boxing Day. You know, you're still, I mean, we are, you know what I call this time of year.
The eating season.
The eating season. Yes. Let the games begin. Right.
So much stuff.
Well, there is so much stuff, and there was a lot of stuff yesterday. Yeah. We were subjected to a lot of stuff, not very many people, an awful lot of food.
Right.
Which just always seems to be
And we
the
left
way it
food
is.
There. We left food there and we were sent home with I think we were right. sent home with more food than we brought.
I was going to say we didn't come out on a positive on that one.
We did come out on a positive.
Well,
on that
we did depending on how you want to look at it.
Yeah.
Whether we're if we were trying to get rid of some extra food, then we lost.
We didn't do a good job. No, but you know what? I was given a box of I was given some marzipan candy. So I think the marzipan candy is going to Florida because my mom, if I remember correctly, my mom has a thing for marzipan. She likes amaretto and she likes marzipan. So all the marzipan's going to Florida.
Good.
Yeah, I know,
good.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, and probably we should bring some other goodies to Florida because why should we buy them?
No, right. There is not much point unless you don't have any place to pack them.
Right. Well, I'm gonna look into that when I get home today.
Okay.
Anyway, so you do have a ton of goodies in the house. Should you eat them all now? Ron is intimating you should.
Is that what I'm doing?
No, I'm not intimating that. I'm intimating that there's a few strategies here. It depends on what you want to do. It depends on how hard you're being on yourself and how much you feel like you can't eat the goodies that you have, because you can give some of the goodies away. You can bring them to work. You can give them away to friends. You can bring them to the food pantry. There's a lot of stuff you can do like that if you don't want to have so much in your house, especially if there are goodies like chocolate and candies and cakes and cookies and stuff. The other thing you can do is if you want to eat them a little bit at a time, if they're baked goods, you can freeze them. And I think we're going to have to do that because we have some baked goods that I don't want to go bad. And I don't know if I want to schlep to Florida. So I think some of them are going to go in the freezer. So that's something you can do, and you can put them in small packages so that you can take a few out at a time and you can enjoy them for over the course of the year. Do you know we have some cornbread in the freezer from Thanksgiving?
We do?
Yeah, we do. I cut it into small pieces and I took out a few little pieces, and I'm not sure I'm going to take any out in the next couple of days because we need to downsize. And so if you also are like you don't want to gorge on a whole bunch of sweets, one of the things to do is to use discipline. Allow yourself to have a couple of goodies during the course of a day, maybe one cookie with your afternoon tea or coffee. And the other thing that I try to remind people is if you're going to eat sweets or sugar or things that are high in carbohydrates, is eat them after a meal. Eat them after you have had your fill of protein and vegetables, because your blood sugar won't spike as much and you actually won't gain as much weight. Also, right now, if you're going to eat your goodies, make sure that most of what you're eating is really healthy and increase the fiber that you're eating. So our friend Bruce made us this really nice dish the other day where it was kind of a hot broccoli cauliflower slaw.
Thank you, Bruce.
It was very nice.
If you're
had,
listening.
Had shrimp in it. It was nicely seasoned.
It was nice.
So,
I liked it.
So we had that. And so it was a lot of fiber. It was a lot of, and it's cauliflower and broccoli, cruciferous vegetables, good for detox. And we had salad with that.
Right.
And so that was really nice. So we're continuing to eat a lot of fiber.
And he grated that broccoli and cauliflower so fine. It was almost like you're eating rice.
Yeah.
It was really interesting.
So it's like a slaw.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah,
it was
good. So it's very nice. And that
we liked
it. We enjoyed it. So that's something you can do. Have heavily veggie-based dishes and then have little bits of your treats after that. And the other thing is, if you've got cabinets or pantries, or especially if you have pantries in other rooms of the house, some people have nice, you know, overstock pantries in other places in the house. We don't, but some people do.
Some people do.
They have like a real basement, and they have shelving in the basement where they have overstock.
Right.
So take a lot of that stuff downstairs and then just keep a reasonable amount out that's going to be good for having a cookie or two a day. One piece of chocolate and one cookie a day, and limit yourself to that, and just eat good all the rest of the day. So that's one way to do it. So, and I'm saying, practicing moderation in some ways can be harder than practicing cold turkey. The only problem with practicing cold turkey and having absolutely none of the treats that you have is that you don't get to have the treats that you have. And it's not practical. In my experience, what I have seen with my patients is that people who, for the most part, people who go on really restrictive diets are not successful. They're successful for a while and they fall off the wagon. Moderation is really, when you're talking about eating, moderation is really the way to go because it's sustainable. You don't feel like you're deprived. You don't feel like you're denied. And it's something you can sustain ongoing. If you don't have in your head, I can never have chocolate again, you're like, I can have a little chocolate, then what you have to do is train yourself to have a little chocolate. That may be the hardest thing to do, but it is not impossible. I've done it, and other people have done it. I have a lovely colleague. Her name is Jill Coleman, and you can go to jillfit.com. And she has a program she does called Moderation 365, where you can actually learn how to do moderation in your eating. She teaches you that.
Right. And it doesn't require like padlocks on the refrigerator or anything like that.
No, you just, it's about being mindful and about being kind to yourself and saying, you know, if you want that treat, there are certain days of the week you get to have it, or there's certain amounts during the day that you get to have it. And what you do, when people eat moderately, they most of the time they eat stuff that's really good for them, and maybe 10% of the time or less they eat something, whatever they want, whatever that is. And you also incorporate exercise into your life. But one strategy, you know, I know people who say, if I have it in the house, I'm going to eat the whole thing. Well, does it have to be that way? Can you train yourself not to do that? But like I said, another solution is to move it, to have only certain things within reach and have certain things in the freezer and have other things, put them away. I mean, you and I could solve this. It would take a big plastic bin and,
In a dumpster.
I know at this point, yes, I agree. But we could sequester some of this stuff.
Yeah,
although I'm moderate to okay about the moderate. Yesterday I wasn't so moderate, but it was Christmas Day.
Yeah,
and today I feel like I'm not gonna eat as much. I just don't feel like eating as much because that's the other thing to do. If you had a big day where you ate a lot of food one day, don't eat so much the next day. That's one of the things that when they study people who keep a healthy weight, they find that people who keep a healthy weight, if they eat a lot of food one day, they don't eat so much the next day.
Like hard training day, easy training day.
Yeah, right. Pretty much. Well,
sort of.
And
I
that's
mean,
there's
same
another
idea.
Thing that people do in terms of training, which is carb cycling, that you have days when you eat a lot of carbs and days that you don't. And so I know for me, I'm going to need the carbs on days when I'm going to do intense cardio, when I'm going to do long cardio or intense cardio. So I'm not going to feel well in your hard interval spin class if I've been doing really low carb. Likewise, I'm not going to feel well on a longer bike ride if I'm really low carb. So the day before, you know, leading up to that workout, I'm going to need to have some carbs on board. And then after the workout, I might have a little bit less carbs and might, you know, switch over to protein and fat. And if I'm going to have a day where I'm not exercising very much, or I'm going to do more resistance training, I'm going to limit the carbs more and focus more on protein and fat, because I want the protein to help to build up my muscles. And the focus is not on keeping the exercise going, but, you know, engaging in the strength training. So there's not a speed element to it, and there's not an endurance element to it, because when you're doing resistance training, you can take breaks. You know, you don't have to do your resistance training unless you're doing a circuit where you're keeping going. But then when you do a circuit where you're going one exercise after the other, that's mixing cardio with resistance training. It's not the same as just doing resistance training. So when you do plain resistance training where you do a set and then you rest and you do a set and then you rest, that's a nice way to go, because when you're doing that exercise, you can go heavier on the protein and lighter on the carbs. And I mean, you probably don't want to be carb free, but you can go lighter on the carbs because you can take rests. The idea is that you're going to lift the amount of weight, whatever your goal weight is that you're lifting, but you're not going to need the carbs in the same way that you're going to need them if you're going to do an intense cardio workout. So carb cycling that's a thing that people do. It's true. And so going on to the next thing I wanted to talk about, which is squeezing exercise in. So Ron and I have tried to stay active during this eating season.
Yes, we have.
And I generally try to do some form of exercise on Christmas Day. Usually I go for a run. I'll run to the end of the road and back. And I decided not to go for a run because my lovely man here was actually available. So I said, let's go for a hike. So we went for Christmas Day hike. It was very nice.
We did. Yeah. We did two things that were really cool on Christmas Day. We did the hike. And we slept in.
Yeah, right. We did.
That was like, you know, I got to say,
that was a treat.
That was a treat. I don't do that very often.
You don't do it as often as I do. I get to sleep later than you do frequently. And
right.
I slept later today.
Well, I'm usually teaching early in the morning, so
right.
It's hard to sleep in.
And I skipped out on spin class this morning. I was like, I didn't want to get up that early. And I decided today was a water day. It's a swim day. It's very nice. So I slept in like an hour longer than I would have. But it was nice. And the pool, when I got into the pool, it was me and nice Anita. There's a lovely woman named Anita I see at the Mansfield Community Center. And she's a skater. She's a skating instructor. And she often teaches at Bolton Palace. And she's really nice. So I see her there. She was there. And one other gentleman was Major Tom was there. And
Major Tom.
Apparently people call him Major Tom. That nice man that you like, that really nice man. He's really tall and he's very friendly.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I'll tell you later. But he was there. It was just the three of us in the pool. And I walked in and said, my pool. And Anita said, I said, this is something I do. If I'm the only one in the pool, I'll joke that it's my pool. And Anita turned to me and said, well, Fran, thank you for letting us swim in it. So it was a nice morning like that. So anyway, squeezing. Now, I'm unusual because I have committed to exercise. I've made it a part of my life, and I do fit it in. And not everybody does that. So I wanted to help to give you some tips, because a lot of you are feeling time crunched. So two things. You're time crunched, and you're also uninspired. I can't. How many times have you asked somebody, what exercise would you like to do? And they say, nothing. I don't wanna.
Do I have to?
Yes.
That's
I hear
one.
That a lot.
Do I have to?
So here's the thing.
I know I should, but.
But I don't wanna.
There's the big but.
So I'm gonna, let me address that for a moment. You know, this idea that we make time to get exercise, you realize that that is a function of 21st century North America. Or 21st century Western culture.
Well, yeah, it's because we don't move during our working hours.
Right. And exercise didn't used to be a thing. When you go to, do you think Amish people exercise?
Yeah, every day.
Right, exactly. Right. They don't.
Every
but they
day
don't...
they get up, they go out, and they move their bodies around, and they work hard, and they go through all this physical exercise.
And they walk a lot. They might go out for walks.
And they may go for walks, but they don't. They're probably walking somewhere.
They might be walking somewhere.
It's probably more destination oriented.
Or they might, or people go for a walk just to go for a walk. They're not thinking of it as exercise.
Right.
Which is something you could have done yesterday. We did see people out walking yesterday.
Which is an okay thing to do. If it's one of those things that you do where you go out for a walk and you don't even consider it exercise, then you've just found something special.
Yes.
Because the whole point is to try to find something that you like to do.
Right.
And it doesn't seem like it's, you know, that much of a labor.
Well, the thing about walking is you just walk. You don't have to do anything special. Well, you just have to have shoes that support you well enough and clothes that keep you warm or cool enough and just go do it. And you can do it anywhere.
Did I tell you that on the first day of next year, there is a first day hike at Mansfield Hollow State Park?
Yeah.
Yeah. We do that every year.
Well, they do that every year.
They now, because I'm not going to be here. But it's already in the works. And, it's going to be you meet at 10:30 to 10:45 in the morning at the parking lot on Bassett's Bridge Road.
Yeah.
And then the hike goes off at 11 a.m. And there's two hikes, a 4.5 mile hike and then a shorter hike, which is 2.2 miles.
Yeah.
So really great way to start the new year.
I led those hikes once.
I know. I've led those hikes a number of times.
But we won't be there.
No, we're not going to be there. No, but you know what? I got an awesome crew that's taking over and they're, you know, they did that last year too. And I guess last year it was brutally cold.
Oh.
But I think they're going to get luckier this year. We'll see. I looked at the extended, not that I believe it, but I looked at the extent and it looks like it's going to be a lot better.
That's good.
So anyway, that's a great way to like kick off the whole idea of maybe using walking as a form of exercise.
Because you don't have to think about it. You just walk.
No. And what did we do yesterday? I took you up to the Goodwin Forest.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
It's a special place. And,
right.
And if you start jotting down on your calendars, you know, special places to go, And pick a new one every weekend or whatever and explore.
I had never been to Goodwin Forest, not in the snow.
I know. We usually go there when the skiing is good or the snowshoeing is good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'd never seen the lake as a lake.
Yeah.
Except on the rail trail, because you go through Goodwin Forest on the rail trail, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So I saw the lake there, but I'd never been walking and I'd never been hiking in Goodwin Forest, only snowshoeing and skiing.
It is only one of many special places
that
you can find. And there's lots. It's a great amount of Joshua's Trust land around here that you can hike. And it's just wherever you live, you can always find a nice place to walk.
Well, within the sound of our voice, first of all, if you live down near the shoreline, I always recommend walking at the beach.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it could be windy down there, but if I live closer to the shoreline, I would walk on the beach more. And I might still do that.
Right.
I'm certainly going to do it next week in Florida.
Well,
but anyway, but walking along the beach is always good for you. Remember, when you walk in sand, here's the thing that I want to remind you about. If you go walking, if you walk on uneven ground, it's really good for you. Again, with walking, you don't have to plan it. You just go and you walk, and you just have to figure out where you're going to walk. But if you walk on trails or if you walk on the sand, you have uneven ground. You have rocks and roots, or you have sand, and it requires you to work on your balance. And yesterday, we were hopping on all these rocks, and that's really good for balance. It's also, so for example, if you have osteoporosis or osteopenia, one of the things you want to do is do activities that pull on your bones, because when the muscles pull on your bones, you're going to send an electrical signal into the bones, so they'll pull more minerals into them. And so when you're moving in lots of different directions, you're going to be pulling on the bones in lots of different directions. So your bones are going to be laying down new minerals in all those different directions. If you're walking in a straight line, you get less bang for your buck. So if you, so walking on uneven ground is really good for you. So going out in the woods and hiking on trails is really great. And walking on the, walking on the beach is really great too. Cause it, again, it requires balance. It requires you to stabilize yourself and you improve your balance. And balance is something that deteriorates as you get older. Also, if you have less muscle mass, you will have poorer balance. Why? Because muscle cells have proprioceptors in them. The less muscles you have, the less proprioceptors you have. The less proprioceptors you have, what's a proprioceptor? Proprioceptor is a receptor you have in your muscle that tells you where you are in space. So the more muscle tissue you have, the more proprioceptors you're going to have, and the more ability you're going to have to keep yourself balanced. Guess what you're going to be less likely to do if you have more proprioceptors and better balance? What are you going to be less likely to do?
Fall over.
You got it.
How about that?
Exactly.
It's a beautiful
and
thing.
What can happen if you fall?
Well, you could get hurt if you fall. You can break a bone.
Yes, you could get a fracture. Right. Exactly. Right. And so, if you have been diagnosed with osteoporosis or osteopenia, the best remedy for that is to move. Mm-hmm. And my patients who've been diagnosed with osteoporosis or osteopenia who are very active despite their diagnosis, they fall and they don't break stuff. And the thing with osteoporosis is that, or osteopenia, is it's not just about the mineralization of the bones, it's the tensile strength of the bones. If the bones are elastic, have good collagen in them, they're not going to break, number one. And number two, if anybody falls, so we cyclists, if we have greater muscle mass, so that's why it's important for cyclists to keep up a routine of resistance training. You want to have some muscle mass on, because if you go down, that muscle mass is going to cushion you and you fall and you'll be less likely to fracture stuff. And we, as cyclists, we're prone to osteoporosis and osteopenia because our sport is non-impact and we sweat a lot and the minerals come out in the sweat. So it is important for us as cyclists to replace those minerals. Anyway, so for people who are time-crunched or uninspired and who are like when we say go exercise, I want to remind you that if you want to try to start by saying I'm going to get 30 minutes of exercise three times a week, that's like a good place to start. That 30 minutes doesn't have to be all at once. It can be you get to rack them up like points. I like things where you get points. By the way, there are apps where you can rack up your points. You can do different diary logs. There's an app called Achievement. There's always My Fitness Pal where you can log your activities. If you log activities that have a GPS, there are often challenges. Get so many steps in this amount of time. Get so many miles in this amount of time. There are challenges that you can do, and then you get a little badge, and then you have a trophy case in your app. It's so cute.
Okay.
You should see my Strava trophy case. It's really cute. I have little trophies.
So you have one of these
apps. I have digital trophies.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Strava gives you trophies if you complete challenges.
Okay.
And I've completed a few challenges, and my Fitness Pal has challenges, too. And they're either eating challenges or exercise challenges. And
so whatever inspires you.
Yeah, so My Fitness Pal, the challenges are generally get X number of workouts in over this amount of time. Of course, it's an honor system, so you could lie because you can manually input your exercise.
Well, what does that do for you?
It doesn't do anything because you can do it. But also you can get other apps that dump into My Fitness Pal. So that's honest because those you can't really lie about. Like you can't make, although you can hand input stuff into Strava too. But the ones that are GPS based, you can't hand input those.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I want to remind you that you don't have to do exercise all at once. So if you feel time crunched, if you're at a desk, if your work allows it, you can go ahead and, stand up for 5 minutes and do 5 minutes of squats and sit back down. You can have light weights or bands at your desk. Bands are really great because bands are easily stored and they're not heavy. They're easy to schlep around. And you can do lots of neat exercises with the bands. There are good stretches you can do. You could do stretches next to your office chair. And again, they don't have to take a long time. You can do, 2 minutes of something or 3 minutes of something and rack them up during the day. Count them Write them into some kind of a diary or app so that you can track your progress, and then you'll feel a sense of accomplishment if you make it. If you're at work, a neat thing to do at work is to do challenges at work. That everybody gets everybody puts money into a pot, and then somebody wins the money if they get the most time of exercise. Or you simply have everybody have the same challenge. Everybody has to get, say, 30 minutes of exercise, or anybody who gets 30 minutes of exercise three times a week, at the end, they get to go to a special party, or they get a special treat or something like that. So challenges like that work. They can be inspiring, and they can help keep you on track. Doing little things here and there can really help. The other thing is, if you have good TV, if you have cable, or if you have one of the non-cable services, if you have Apple TV or Roku or Amazon.
Online services, right.
Different online services. Yep. Mm-hmm. Any of those services are going to have fitness classes.
They are.
And
yeah.
The neat thing about the fitness classes is because they're not live, you can stop and start them. So you can do 5 minutes of a yoga class. You can do very short... You can do a very short yoga class. You can do, you could do 5 minutes of a yoga class, hit stop.
You can do a little bit of a Pilates class. You can do a little bit of a, core workout of any kind. There's lots of different things you can do.
Right.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's that's pretty simple.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about...
Say hello to my mom. She called while I'm on the air.
Oh, that was nice for her to call while you're on the air.
We're going to just let you know that we are live on the air on Radio Naturopath. And so it's really great to talk to you, and Happy New Year. And I will talk to you a little bit later, Mom.
Oh, you're actually talking to her right
yes.
now.
Yeah, yeah, I good. Wanted her to know that I was alive.
We're on the air.
We are on the air. Oh, all right, okay. So we'll talk to you in a little bit, Mom.
Bye. There you go.
All right.
Bye, Mom.
So
anyway, here's an interesting thing. Last week, when we got done with the radio show, I walked into the office here, the general manager's office where Barbara is, and I happened to notice that they have these new desks. And they have standing desks. So I thought maybe we should talk a little bit about standing desks. Now, there's research out there that there's positives and negatives on standing desks. But I think that basically standing lowers your risk of weight gain and obesity. Using a standing desk may lower blood pressure levels. Standing may lower your risk of heart disease. And standing desks appear to reduce back pain. There's a whole bunch of listings here. May help improve mood and energy levels, and they may even boost productivity. So now, of course, there are the naysayers who say a standing desk may not be any better for your health than a sitting one. A growing body of evidence suggests that, yes, sitting for long periods of time can have a detrimental effect on your health, but unfortunately, standing for large spans of the day isn't great either. So why not a balance of both, like up and down and up and down?
Well, that's the thing that you're gonna if you have the opportunity to stand up, you can it's gonna help. It's gonna be helpful.
Right.
So the thing would not be to stand all day nor to sit all day.
Right.
It would be to get up and down.
Right. And if you don't know what a standing desk is, if you're not aware of these things, there's a little motor on them, and you push a button and the desk goes up and down.
Yeah.
And so you can put it at whatever level you need it to be at. They're probably not inexpensive, but neither is healthcare. So
right.
If you look at it from that perspective, then you're probably saving some money in the long run. I'd kind of look at it that way. Try to rationalize everything out. But they do make a lot of sense. Or you can just get up from your desk and walk around your office for a little while. You know, I have that, and I need to hang it back up. I have that pull-up bar that I put in my doorway in my office, and when I've been sitting for too long, I get all tight. So I just get up, and I do a couple of pull-ups and just kind of, you know, stretch it out a little bit. Sometimes I just hang from the thing just to,
right.
just to, you know, kind of let my body stretch out and stretch down
yeah.
and not be so cramped up.
Right. And so that's a great thing if you have one of those. If you don't have one of those, there's stretching poses that you can do, like the yoga pose that we call forward fold, where you just fold your body in half and hang. And of course, not everybody can reach their toes or can touch the floor as they're folded over. But that's what you have in yoga. You have blocks. You have those foam blocks that you can use, and you can put your hands on those. And those, because they're rectangular, they have two options of height. So you can bend over and put your hands on one of those blocks. If you don't have blocks, you can stack up a bunch of books or binders and put your hands on those. But if you fold forward and with a little support, you reach down, you can open up the spaces between your spine. And that's really good for getting circulation back into those vertebrae. It's going to reduce back pain. That's another way. If you have an office that's amenable to that,
mm-hmm.
And you have a job where you're kind of stuck at the desk, because some jobs you get up and down all day.
Right.
You know, my staff gets up and down all day. And I'm fortunate in that the nature of my job is I have to get up every half hour, 2 hour.
Right.
Until it's the end of the day where I'm doing charting, but there's no reason why I can't get up and down as much as I want. You know,
right.
There's nobody standing over me telling me not to. So,
right.
And
right.
I'll do that sometimes. Like I'll finish a task, you know, because I'll do a chart and the chart eventually has to be moved somewhere else. It doesn't stay in my office. It has to go somewhere else. So if I feel like I want to, you know, get exercise, one thing I can do is I finish with the chart, and then even though it's not efficient time-wise, I'll pick up the chart and carry it to where the next place it goes, and then I'll pick up the next chart and work on that and carry it. And then I get up and down a lot, and that's better than, you know, just sitting. So that's interesting. So having a standing desk is going to give you some more it's going to give you some more exercise. And there are some studies that show that the standing desks have been, they lower people's risks of heart disease. They lower risks of weight gain and obesity and blood sugar levels and mood and energy and boost productivity. There's some good studies on it.
There are. So, you know, another thing you can do if you don't have a standing desk, and, you know, you talk a lot about how we don't hydrate enough.
Yeah.
Get up and go get a drink.
Yeah.
And get back down, and then at least now you're solving two problems at the same time.
Right. Well, and also, like I said, if you have the option to finish a task by moving something that has to go somewhere instead of, you know, waiting for you to have a stack to move it, take the pieces one at a time
mm-hmm.
and walk those. And the thing is, my job is task oriented, so I don't have to be time efficient, except that it's nice to get home at a reasonable hour. So,
right.
So I mean, I can do things like that. Some people have a time efficiency thing. So if they can't necessarily pick up the chart and carry it somewhere else until they have a stack, like it's not as time efficient. But for me, getting up and carrying that chart somewhere else is going to make me more efficient because I'm not zoned out sitting for
right.
so long.
Right.
Because you're basically taking a little break. So that's a neat thing. All right. So that's our what we've got for you today on Boxing Day, December 26, 2018. So I had some more stuff to talk about, but we can talk about more stuff when we see you in we'll be back in 2 weeks
because
we'll be away next week. So eat your veggies, eat your goodies slowly. Eat your goodies after eating your fill of protein and vegetables, and just eat a little at a time. Pack some away, put them away, and put some in the freezer and put some in the pantry downstairs or in the other room so you're not looking at them all the time. Give some away. Share them with friends. There's lots of things that you could do. And find little ways to get 5-minute bouts of exercise so it adds up to 20 or 30 minutes most days. That's something you can do. Meanwhile, We'll be back in 2 weeks. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can also email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram, at Fran Storch, ND. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath in 2 weeks at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores.